The Nature Podcast is supported by Nature Plus, a flexible monthly subscription that grants immediate online access to the science journal Nature and over 50 other journals from the Nature portfolio. More information at go.nature.com/plus.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
We met Ali 12 Trees for the first time in episode 1. She was outside the Wellcome Trust building on a very rainy day in March 2020, ready and waiting to give her presentation. She's trying for the second time to win a grant to keep her lab alive.
It's like the end of a process, you know? Certainly the end of something, whatever happens.
She called us when she got out, and Benjamin ran down the road to meet her in the cafe next door. She was pretty upbeat.
I didn't say anything that I regret.
We know that laugh by now. The Ali laugh. The laugh that says, I'm nervous, but I'm trying to keep it light. The self-deprecating laugh. Still, the last time Ali did this interview, she wasn't laughing at all afterwards.
Like, I remember I met Richard and Kerry, and I think they were hoping me to be really happy that it was over, and I was a bit like, I don't think that went well. Like, I could tell that I'd been rattled and that I just wasn't confident. I didn't have the conviction of my ideas. It's like, it's a lot of emotional investment. You want it to be really analytical and like whatever, and it's just not.
She's no less invested this time around. Probably more when she thinks of the students she's left beavering away in the lab, reliant on her to attract resources. This time she's come to the same building, given a similar 5-minute presentation to a similar 30-person panel, in a room just across the hall from the one she's in today. But this time felt different.
So the last time, I remember that room, like, I was in the left-hand side, I remember it just being very dark. It was wood-panelled still, I think. It was incredibly dark. I had made my slides with a dark background, so there was no illumination from my slides, and I couldn't really see. But this time it was very light and bright.
So that was the 5th of March. Ali went back up to Sheffield that night and tried not to think about when she would hear back from the panel. For a couple of weeks, she helped her PhD students to get their experiments working, gathering data on the shape of the kinesin motor protein. But then something much more seismic took over. Cases of the new coronavirus had been drifting upwards in the UK, and the first deaths are reported in early March. Italy, the first European country to be hit with an outbreak, put its whole population into lockdown on March the 9th. Around that time, the UK government advised people with symptoms of a cold to stay at home. Nature's offices were still open, like most others in London. But Dan and Ali started to make plans.
So it's kind of weird because, like, last two weeks even, I'd already started talking to my team and, like, well, if we need to go to working from home, because you could kind of see what was happening in Europe, right? Like, you watch the news, you see it happening. So we sort of talked about what would happen if they couldn't come into lab. And it's hard because, like, I don't want to pretend they're going to be productive in this time, because they're not. But at the same time, we don't really know how long we're going to be in this state. So it was more like, these are useful things that you could concentrate on if you want to.
A week drifted by, then two. By the 18th of March, the university had stopped face-to-face teaching. Dan had to broadcast his lectures from an empty theatre. But they hadn't issued any official instructions on lab closures. Not prepared to wait, Ali and Dan made some difficult choices.
Yesterday, we sort of made the decision that we were just shutting everything down because it just wasn't... Like, you kind of have to, it's difficult to move on unless you make a decision, right?
I mean, obviously, it's sad from a personal perspective. Obviously, it's the right thing to do for people's safety and so there's no debate about it. But I think having the last few weeks before the virus... You were starting to see there was a community in the lab, which was nice, and people interacting. and science happening. There were days when even I managed to get into the lab over the last few weeks, so there were four or five people working in lab, and having battled quite hard to get to that point, it was really satisfying. So it's quite sad from that perspective to see it all closed down.
There are things they can do while the labs are closed. Some of Dan's students have results to play with, some can design new experiments ready for the return. But neither lab has a repository of data just sitting waiting.
It's really, really hard for us. It's so hard because we're such a... We've only just started, right? So we're not sat on stacks and stacks of data waiting to analyse. That's not how that works. You're starting out, right? And I think it's a little bit frustrating, you know, seeing like the big established labs kind of mouthing off on Twitter, being like, oh yeah, we're just going to write loads of papers and do all this analysis.
More than the science, though, it's the social implications of the shutdown that Ali and Dan are most concerned about.
The social side is really difficult, and I think that's what I miss most. Yes, science is happening, but that will happen again. Again, having worked really hard to build a coherent lab that get on with each other and that enjoy working together, to see that dissipate is quite difficult.
It's a period that's likely to affect those on the lower rungs of the scientific ladder most profoundly, Ali says. New PIs in barely stable situations, some who might have young children at home, students with limited time and funding.
I don't think anybody has really begun to grasp how massive an effect this is going to have.
On the 23rd of March, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson addressed the nation.
From this evening, I must give the British people a very simple instruction. You must stay at home.
Lockdown for 3 weeks, enforced by the police, Johnson declares a national emergency in an historic address to the nation.
Ali and Dan, already working from home, were now looking after Ada too. Her school closed at the end of the week.
I told her the other day, well, we were talking about homeschooling the other day and how she felt about it, and she said, I think it's a great idea, Daddy. I'm going to be the teacher. I think that's pretty much the basis for how homeschooling's going to happen.
They decide to focus on fun rather than hardcore learning, since Ada is only five. They draw flowers in the garden and do an online exercise class as a family.
So our neighbours must think we're crazy jumping around, which is quite hard work. So that's our 9 o'clock routine for getting out of bed to do some PE. And then we dissected a daffodil before lunch today, which was quite nice, and drew a picture of it.
The following Wednesday, 2 days into lockdown, reality sets in a bit more. Ali still hasn't heard from Welcome, and both she and Dan are trying to keep their teams motivated and occupied. But this pause is the last thing they need.
I'm really worried because we don't really have any money at the moment. And it becomes very difficult in these circumstances to write another grant or create more preliminary data, or, I don't know, we might just sink.
Later that afternoon, Ali was making Ada a snack when she saw an email from Welcome on her phone. The subject line was the same as it was when she last heard from them about a grant.
And I opened it up and read the first couple of sentences. Well, I don't even think I read them. I just kind of scanned them. Ran upstairs and cried on Dan.
Ali read us the email later that day.
Dear Dr. 12 Trees, I am pleased to confirm that your application was successful.
It sounds melodramatic, but it kind of just means everything. Like, this is everything that I've worked for, and knowing that we can do all of the things that we're excited about for 5 years, that's the most certainty you ever get in a scientific career. Like, that we're going to do all the things that we're most excited about. and get really cool data and see things that people haven't seen yet. You know, it's really cool. it's a bit like winning the science lottery.
Ali has won £1.26 million. She assembled her team on Zoom and gave them the news.
So, I have something important that's just happened. We've got £1 million.
Lockdown continues beyond the 3 weeks the government initially planned, into April and then into May. By the second month, there's a rhythm to Dan and Ali's days. They split the day half and half. They keep office hours so their team members know when they can find them online. Ali has designed projects for the master's students who were due to start in her lab the week it closed. She and Dan are both worried about how they're going to extend the funding that their students will need after the gap. These positions are often funded by a patchwork of separate studentships. Many have had to pause or refocus their projects. One of Dan's students has taken a leave of absence to volunteer in a COVID testing lab. But they're also making tentative plans for reopening, its own logistical headache, with social distancing guidelines and personal thresholds for feeling safe. Dan's lab is in its own space with four walls, but Ali's is open plan, making timetabling a nightmare.
It's not just about what we want to do, it's about what every other lab in the building wants to be able to do as well, because if there's, you know, density of people and stuff, we have to work together as a department to make sure that it's fair, basically, and that people have the access that they need.
In the summer of 2020, Dan's lab opens again and his group can come and go as they please, as long as they're socially distanced. Ali's lab at Citran is a tighter space. There's no room for them all at once. The whole building works on a shift pattern.
One of the biggest hurdles we've got at the moment is access to microscopes, because it involves moving between buildings to try and do experiments, which is really hard on everybody.
Several lab members have fallen foul of the arrangement, preparing samples all morning at Citran and taking them to another building for microscopy, only to discover they don't have all the reagents they need, at which point they can't go back to Citran. Mostly, the team has found ways around it.
Yeah, it's a totally different way of doing science, because people in they're all doing bits of experiments for each other now. And that, you know, they've been brilliant at it. They're taking care of each other.
At the end of 2020, we touch base again. Ali has just sent out an email to start the process of getting her grant money. It won't all flood in immediately. In fact, it might be months until the more expensive items can be procured. But it's a start. And the team has already decided what they want their first purchase to be. It's practical rather than flashy.
We also collectively quite like being very organised. And they wanted to take it a step further, and I think we've decided on a label maker.
In Dan's lab, the students are more and more self-sufficient, making decisions without him. And his first ever PhD student is about to fly the nest. That's making him feel like a real lab head.
It's kind of handing off from being an early career group to one that's up and running, and I haven't quite noticed it happen, but suddenly it's like, oh, suddenly, yeah, my first student is thinking about writing up, and we're 3 years in, and we've got money, and we've got a group that's growing.
By the end of 2020, Dan and Ali had hit their stride. Ali decided to release her grant money in January, Dan was recruiting for a postdoc, and together they've weathered what the COVID pandemic has thrown at them so far. At Nature, we'd started to write up their story and make this series when we got some news that came as a shock. When we called them next, they looked sombre and tired.
It's obviously a big curveball that none of us were really expecting. And I was just biking home from work and I woke up in hospital.
In December, Dan was on his usual route home from work, past the children's hospital.
I think when I first got the call, the guys who found you couldn't rule out. No one saw Dan fall off his bike.
And there was no CCTV footage. So it sort of looked a bit like a hit and run. And I found that, I mean, in terms of it being a road accident and Dan being on his bike, that's something that kind of I have a fear of in general.
In fact, Dan had had a brain hemorrhage. He was found by a team of doctors coming out of the children's hospital.
They diagnosed me before they put me on the ambulance, so they knew what to look for in A&E when I got there. And there is a brain injury stroke unit in the Sheffield hospital, so they were able to do everything really quickly. And but otherwise, I would have been in real trouble.
The doctors treating Dan put him into an induced coma.
And it wasn't really clear when Dan went in, that Dan was ever going to wake up. I think the doctors were not particularly beaten around the bush in terms of the condition in which he entered hospital about what his chances were. So I think that he's here at all is one thing, let alone that he's basically working as normal.
Almost fully functioning.
Dan spent 3 weeks in hospital before being able to come home to continue his recovery. Ali and fellow lab head Emma Thompson took over the day-to-day running of his lab, and colleagues picked up his teaching.
I woke up in hospital and I had lectures starting in January. I'm like, right, I'm well. I need to get back and do my lectures now.
He was not well. He was on a lot of drugs.
I think that was for drugs talking, indeed.
In the months since, Dan has made a remarkable recovery. He can walk and speak basically as before. He's still not back to normal, whatever normal looks like now. He still gets very tired, and if he forgets to do his physio, one of his feet goes numb. But both labs are running well. Dan has appointed a postdoc to continue the microscope work he began last year, and Ali has started the paperwork required to buy her £250,000 dream microscope. She's also getting some interesting results from her collaboration with the optics lab, which could change her theory of how motor proteins work. Of course, like all PIs, they have half an eye on the horizon and their next big check. After all, it's now 2 years since Dan's 5-year grant started, and there'll be more grants needed after that. But for now, they have some time.
I think we're just going to enjoy not feeling like the clock's ticking. A little bit.
Yeah, I think you get used to being on a perpetual cliff edge of
unemployment.
Yeah, I mean, so I think we'll try and enjoy, yeah, hopefully a period of stability to kind of build some really strong foundations.
There are thousands of scientists like Ali and Dan, and thousands of versions of this story every year as they take their first steps into independent science. Every successful lab head has been a new PI, but not every new PI has allowed 4 reporters to follow them for 3 years. We'd like to say thank you to Ali and Dan for sharing their journey so far with us, and now with you. And of course, Ali and Dan's journey has only just begun. They've built strong foundations, now we leave them to build their house. This episode of Starting Up in Science was written by me, Kerry Smith. Benjamin Thompson and I produced the series with editing help from Noah Baker. Heidi Ledford, Richard Van Norden, Benjamin Thompson and I reported the story for the podcast and for the text version that you can find on our website. Read that at nature.com/news.
Deep dive into the world of science with Nature Plus. From the vastness of the distant star systems to the intricacies of infectious diseases due to climate change, we've got you covered. Enjoy access to over 55 cutting-edge journals, breaking scientific news, and over 1,000 new articles every month. Whether you're a seasoned researcher or just curious, Nature Plus simplifies complex studies. Plus, it's all available right at your fingertips on nature.com. Nature Plus, the key to unlocking the world's most significant scientific advances. Subscribe today at go.nature.com/plus.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.